Hey, Death Eaters. Welcome back to Meditating on Death. We're your hosts, Hua.
And Les.
And today we have our very first guest. His name is Mark.
Mark! Woo!
But before we get into our guest episode, we're going to do our usual
check-in.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, did you want to go first?
I can absolutely go first. First off, hi. Welcome back. It feels so good to be back, by the way. Couple of changes. I think the most notable one for me is the change in weather and how dark it's been getting, like at like 5 o'clock. So my little check-in topic today, folks, is to regulate your hormones. Because we're not getting that sunlight, you might find yourselves a little bit more crabby than usual. Something that's really helped me is taking vitamin D to regulate my hormonal levels, and I feel a little bit better.
Really?
I don't know if it's a placebo effect, but because I'm really not getting as much sunlight as I used to during the summer, that has been really helping me fight off the winter blues, especially with getting dark at 5 o'clock. I'm like still not used to it.
Do you get seasonal depression?
I think everyone is prone to it. So they say that you should actually exercise more and eat soups with like root vegetables for those antioxidants and nutrients. Mm-hmm. Take vitamin D to combat the seasonal affective disorder. So yeah, I think everyone's prone to it, including myself. Mm-hmm. So I actually try to be more consciously combative of that.
Yeah, maybe I should start taking vitamin D. I get like seasonal depression. Like,
it's real.
It's bad.
Yo, it's like, real.
I was telling like some of our friends, I was just like, you know, when it starts getting dark at like 4 p.m., I'm just like, I don't know what to do with my life.
I'm clocking off.
Yeah.
It's like, I just want to be in bed.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, consider vitamin D and exercising more and lots of soups.
Yeah. Because it's soup season.
It is very much
soup season. Is really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, your turn.
My check-in is a little bit, I guess, more heavy. Mm-hmm. Recently, there was the Israel and Gaza conflict. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, this is something to be a little bit more, for all of us to be a little bit more informed and educated on that front. Because the U.S. does play a huge role in all of the things that are happening in the world right now. Mm-hmm. And political conversations aren't something that people really want to touch on because it becomes controversial.
Yeah.
But I think in the world that we are living in, it's good to be educated because then you would know the steps to take in order when the time comes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's also important to have a critical eye when it comes to consumption of information because there's, as we know, there's a lot of things that are posted. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times on social media, they only play like the most dramatic, full of emotion highlight reel. And what, not even social media, the news in general, they just keep replaying that over and over and over again. So to really make sure that you approach this with a critical eye, I think is also very important.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also to listen from both sides, right? Because each side will feel very, very strongly about like their side.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, so this sort of like throws us into what's happening in the next year. Presidential elections are coming up in the next year, and that's in November 5th, I believe, of 2024. Mm-hmm. If you're unhappy about what's going on, like figure out who, forget about parties. Mm-hmm. Like don't, the reason why there are issues right now is because people vote mainly for their parties, but they're not voting for the people who are actually going into office.
Yeah.
What makes a difference right now is for us to come out to the primary elections. Mm-hmm. Everyone waits until the general election to vote, but they don't realize that the primary election allows you to place those people onto the ballots, right? Many states right now for the presidential election is closed, right? It's closed primary elections. So you can only vote for the party that you're registered with. But the thing is, before you're registered with any party, determine which person you want on that ballot and register for that party so that you can get that person on the ballot, right?
Folks, you can control, you know, who goes on the ballot.
You can complain as much as you want, but the issues
will continue.
Like, what
are you doing about it, bitch?
Yeah.
I mean,
Exactly.
Yeah. And do something about it.
So some information I'm going to spit out right now.
Spit out the truth.
California specific. This is specific to California, but you can also find primary election information based on your state if you just search it on Google.
But it's so easy.
Exactly. So for the California primary elections, for the U.S. presidential and also congressional elections, it's February 27th is the last day you can register to vote. So right now, do your research on all the presidents or like people in Congress that are gonna or that are trying to get into the general election, right? Determine who you want to vote for, like what their stance is, how they're gonna benefit us. Go into the primaries and like say, hey, I want this person on the general election. The voter turnout for primary elections is around 20%.
Wow.
20 to 30%. While general elections, around like 80% comes out.
Yes.
And at that point, like you don't really have the
much choice, yeah.
Choice, right? So that's my check-in.
Yes, February 27th, folks. We still got time.
Yeah, yeah. And just educate yourself.
Yes, yes. Love it. Spread your passion. And I think it comes from being educated about these topics. Like, once you are educated, you're like, wait, I actually have a little bit more power and say than I actually thought, as opposed to, like, what has been kind of consuming my perspective, you know?
Yeah, don't let media tell you that you have no power over who becomes our leader.
Right? I mean, there's like so many things that we can get into, but I think that's a really important message.
Yeah.
So thanks for sharing that.
Yay.
Girl.
Okay. All so right. Now we are going to get into our nugget. And our first guest ever, Mark, will be introducing himself.
Yes, we've actually asked him to do a special introduction. So Mark, hi.
Hello, everybody.
Hi. Take it away.
I'm so excited to be here.
We are too.
Well, my name is Mark, and I was asked to do an introduction without specifying an occupation or a hobby, so we could get deep into my personality.
Yes.
Yes.
I would like to think that I'm a pretty charismatic person.
I would say so.
Very detail-oriented, and I observe a lot of these and I observe a lot around me, but I would say that I don't do a lot with the details that I observe. I just feel like I appreciate everything that's happening around me, and I'm just an observer of life.
Mm. Yes. But also, we don't always have to do things that we observe. We only have like a limited capacity. But I would very much agree with the fact that he's a charismatic person.
Yeah, and you are a very observant person. Sometimes you point out things that I don't realize either, and I'm like, oh, I didn't see it that way.
Yeah.
But it's a very cool perspective. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm excited to be here. Let's get into it.
Yes.
So the first, as we always do in every episode, we do a this or that.
Yes. But today we invited Mark for interior design.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. That's all right. So we're going to ask him a couple of questions, this or that, about interior design, right?
Yes. Thank you, Les. It's been a month back. And so with his expertise on interior design, we're going to jump in. And so our first this or that is industrial design or boho.
Oh, my goodness. We're going straight into the aesthetics and looks of things. I would always go for an industrial design.
Oh, why? Like.
I feel like industrial is just a aesthetic that people don't really do often. And I'm not trying to say that I'm like always looking for the design choice that's the least popular, but I feel like boho has really lost its appeal. You know,
is it because it's overdone?
I think it's because it's just really commercialized nowadays. Like you go into like Zara Home or like Urban Outfitters see all these like tapestries and all these like you know like rugs that don't really mean anything when
can't wait to hear Les's. No, like, what a fresh take. I love it. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. The aesthetic is good. And the, you know, if you really love that style, that's really who you are. And then go for it. But I guess I just really like the industrial style myself.
Yeah.
Where would you often see industrial design?
Oh, like a lot of refurbished, like, live work lofts turn into commercial or turn into residential spaces.
Oh my God, I'm loving his vocabulary right now. You know what I mean? Like, this is not vocabulary that you and I would normally use. Yes.
You'll find
lived in spaces. Yeah. Loves. I feel like I'm just getting smarter talking to Mark. Okay, next one.
Feng shui, a believer or non-believer?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely believe it. I absolutely believe it. Mm-hmm. You know that feeling that you get, it's kind of like a sixth sense feeling where you're just like, oh, is someone looking at me? And you're looking around and you're just like, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure that we've all kind of just looked at somebody before and then like, for some reason, they're like, they're able to find the direction of where you're kind of at because they could feel that energy. You know what I mean? Have you ever tried that experiment?
Okay. Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's the same principles, I feel like. I feel like feng shui is all about energy and like getting it right gives you peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So believer for sure. And then the next one is antique or modern furniture?
Modern furniture.
Oh, wait.
Modern furniture.
Wait.
This is a hot take.
You did not skip a beat at all to that question.
This is a hot take and I wanted to bring it up.
Yes.
Okay. Go
maybe,
for it.
Maybe not right now since we're doing a quick little hot take.
Yeah.
Just give us like a one little sentence.
Oh my, vintage is overrated. It is just, I don't understand the hype. It's overhyped.
Oh my God.
Modern furniture all the way.
I can't wait to be educated.
I got questions on that, but we will save it for our nugget.
Yes.
Yes.
Let's dive deep.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your journey as interior design? Like, how did you even decide that you wanted to be an interior designer?
I feel like it kind of just happened, and I've always just kind of had a natural interest in it. So I graduated college with a civil engineering degree, and I started doing apartment complexes like ground-up construction in Seattle, and I hated it.
Oh.
It was mostly because the weather. It was like I was wearing boots and a hard hat and a high-vis jacket, and it was like, raining all the time. And so I transitioned into interior renovations, interior construction. And then I started doing commercial spaces, and I really liked that. And then I came here from Seattle because the company that I worked with got bought out by a bigger company down here. I did a project for Google, and they really liked it, so they hired me on to do their office spaces and all that stuff. And it was really my first chance of doing something really like fun and creative because they have that culture there. It's not just a bank or a Wells Fargo where it's just this, and that. It's like, oh, you get to explore what people want to see. You know, they have the budget to do new things and, you know, fun things. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun. And then after that, I started posting on my own social medias. And the company that I work with now called Bucket Place kind of found my social medias and asked me to create content for them full time.
Ooh.
It's an interior design app from Korea.
Everyone download it.
Oh.
It's called O House. But so now I kind of just do it full-time, residential and commercial.
Mm.
And it's been going great. And I kind of do renovations and construction consulting on the side as well. It's been really fun.
Do you feel more in tune with yourself now that, like, because sometimes when we go into a career, right, and it just absolutely just not working for us, like, we just feel like we're not happy. We're like, everything just sucks, right? Because you're doing this 8 hours a day. After you made that switch, do you feel like everything's just feels like,
oh yeah, definitely,
piecing together?
Everything just kind of, you know, every aspect of my work life kind of just comes full circle. And, you know, I don't have the Sunday scaries anymore.
Oh my God, that's so beautiful. Oh my God.
We gotta get there.
My Sunday scaries are so real and so prominent.
It's okay. You're on break. You don't have to worry about it right now.
I don't have Sunday scaries today because I don't have school next week. But yes, love that. Love hearing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's start with this one. What is one thing you wish people knew about interior design?
Okay. So overall, I really feel like people misunderstand interior design to be like the aesthetic, the look, when it should be about the science of why people do things and how you could curate a space for an optimal living.
So like more functionality?
Oh, I was the other person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you give us like an example?
So for instance, like say you're looking for a dining set, like whether it's a square dining set, a circular dining set, or whatever. I think something that people are always looking for is obviously the look of the dining set, but the size of the dining set, right? Mm-hmm. People want to have an optimal space, but they don't really know how to do it. Mm. And it's hard to tell them, oh, this is why you should have this or that without having tangible numbers or like, I would even go far to say like a scientific reasoning behind it. Mm-hmm. And so that's when interior design comes into play, where you have these tangible numbers, kind of like these rules that you can kind of go off by. So for instance, a single path walkway should always be 3 feet. If it goes, it feels and it acts detrimental to your space when it's less than that. Hmm. And it's, you could tell that, you know, even the door, like a standard door width is 3 feet. Mm-hmm. So it tells you that, right?
Wow. Oh my God, this is like not even on my radar. Yeah. Amazing.
It's like you just live in it, but you don't think about that.
No.
Right.
Yeah. So after all these iterations, you realize, oh, 3 feet is the magic number. That's the rule to play by. And people don't know these magic numbers.
Yeah.
So they think it's all about the look when really it's about, you know, years and years of user testing and optimal living.
Mm-hmm. Optimal living. Yeah, I definitely go for aesthetics first when I'm shopping for furniture or decorating.
To be honest, for interior design, I was just like, oh, it's basically just what it looks like.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think about, like, the sizing and on all that.
Yeah.
Do you keep those numbers at the top of your head all the time?
No, there's actually... So, I would say an interior design Bible would be the ASTM C3.0 guidebook. It is... You can look it up.
Just kidding.
You can look it up. It's available. Every county has their own version of it. You know, it's codes and, you know, building rules and all that stuff. So whenever you need to know about something, consult that. It's kind of hard to navigate through, but once you figure out kind of like, you know, how to read it, then everything you need is in there.
Okay.
Yeah. Or you hire on Mark.
Yes. But let's simplify it so that it's accessible to, you know, regular civilians like us who are not well versed in interior design. Let's say a person has just moved. What are the basic tenets or pillars that a person should follow when they're looking at a space and they've just moved into a new house?
Well, I think first of all, you have to take the architecture of the home in mind. Anybody could, you know, find something that looks nice and looks great. And you could see this in a lot of newer apartment complexes right now where the space and the amenities and the, I would say the finishes are just amazing. But we've all walked into an apartment tour where either it's a studio or a one bedroom and you're thinking, man, this is a really small one bedroom or this is a really small living room, you know. But people are fooled and infatuated by how nice it looks. But then when you actually start moving in your furniture, you start to realize there's no real optimal layout for my furniture
here. Oh.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, we are kind of blinded by, like, the flashy things. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. And then we, like, actually forget to look at the size and the dimensions of it. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Right. So I think the number one thing people should look at first is, you know, look past how it looks and go straight into how would you... you know, vision yourself living in that space and how would you, you know, go about your everyday here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I would also say that lighting makes a huge difference.
Lighting. Are you a mood lighting type of person?
No. There's this huge discussion right now on social media about never turning on the big light.
Oh my God. I've seen that.
Oh, light, I've never seen that.
It feels unwelcoming and overstimulating. Like it feels like a grocery store where it's really bright and all that stuff. But I actually think the opposite.
Oh, okay. Love it.
I think that ceiling lights are much better than mood lighting, really.
Like recessed lighting or like do you know those boob lights?
Oh.
Boob? There's like boob lights.
Boob?
Boob. Like it looks like a boob.
It's like
the really old kind.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I just am I love bright places.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
I think it wakes me up. Yeah. Some people say it's like sterile or it feels like a hospital-like, but like I need all lights on in all places of my house because I'm just a scaredy cat and I don't know. I want to know where everything is. Like And I just like love light and sun, and I just like it to be like bright at all times. So when I did see this like mood lighting thing going, I'm like, oh my God, that's like literally so many lights I have to turn on.
Like the mood lighting, it's like the accent lightings. Is that what they're talking about? Or you guys are talking about?
Right, like floor lamps, table lamps.
Oh, that's so many lights. When we were looking at the lightings, right, before we contacted you, people were like talking about, we were looking at all these videos and they had so many lamps, and then when they would walk into the room, they would turn on all these lamps. I'm like, sometimes I just want to come home and switch one light on, you know?
Hello, practicality.
I'm tired. Why am I going around and like turning everything on?
I mean, I know that we have like app controlled.
Oh yeah, you can't link all of
but
them.
But it's like, yeah. Bitch, I can't afford that.
And it's a lot of effort too.
It is a lot of effort. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm not that tech savvy and I don't really want to like set it up. And I know that's very stubborn and like old fashioned, but I'm just like, I just want to switch on one light and be good with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So I think lighting is really important, whether you get it naturally through daylight, through windows, but also just making sure that the space that you're coming into has those ceiling lights and has the capacity to, you know, brighten everything up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Those are two pillars.
I think beyond that, I think it's just a case-by-case basis. So I think those two are really the things that you really need to look at.
Like the main ones, yeah.
Right. Because at the end of the day, whether you're a renter or you're renovating your house, like, those are two universal things, no matter what kind of situation or living situation that you're in.
Yeah.
Everything else after that, is, I would say, is case by case.
Okay.
For sure.
Very nice. The next question is, what is your approach to interior design? And do you approach interior design differently from when you design your own place versus someone else's?
Okay. So I want to talk about first, like, I guess this is also a hot take. Can we get into that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have this theory. I guess not really a theory because, you know, I see a lot of people online talking about this. I think interior designers nowadays are delusional. I feel like a lot of them are, you know, they're in their head in their own art, mm-hmm. to the point where they're no longer grounded or relatable to the regular client or person.
Okay, I can see that. You know what I mean? Yeah, mm-hmm. I can see that.
So, like, you hire an interior designer because they have amazing taste and, you know, should they know, like, kind of, like, the form and function of interior design, you know, that's a plus too. That's awesome. But, like, when you look at the type of work that they do, it's, like, let me specify this very specific $2,000 chair. Like, you could talk me into that all you want, but yeah, at the end of the day, it's a $2,000 chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, where's the interior designer for the people, right? Like,
yeah.
Where, like,
yeah, oh, thank you. Interior exactly. designer for the people. That is your logo and your mantra.
Exactly.
For the people. Great point. Sorry.
Right. People think interior designers is like a luxury because, you know, they specify very expensive things. They themselves have a very expensive rate. But I think what's really missing is that, you know, this information and this, like, way of optimal living should be available to everybody at every price point.
Mm, great point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's not about the $2,000 chair. Sometimes it's about just telling them that, hey, you can only have this many chairs, or you should have a layout like this, you know, type of situation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's kind of lost because when you're deep into kind of, like, this art, you're trying to... How would I say this? You're trying to project your own personality and expertise to the things that you specify for other people.
Yes. Oh my God, I feel that 100%.
Do you think it's more like they're just trying to push that, like, they're just trying to push it so that, like, their idea is, I don't know how to phrase this properly, but, like, do you know how, like, you think your idea is so amazing? So you just want everyone to, like, have the same idea as you, so they're just trying to push that onto their right. clients and stuff.
And that's why I think that's the delusion. Like, they have kind of this, or I guess the experience that I've had with, like, talking to other interior designers is that they have this notion, like, this person came to me, so obviously they want my take on it. When realized they should always have the client in mind, and if they don't like something, you should reiterate to help better understand what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But the delusion comes in the fact that they think, oh, like, they came to me over other people, they must want only what I want.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. Like, yes, an interior designer must have their own, I guess, like, brand or their look, but I think it's really important to keep the client in mind, because then, like, all of the work that you produce isn't customized or tailored to the client. It's just a cookie cutter here's a space that I transformed, you know, of what I think looks nice as opposed to keeping the customer in mind. That's a great point. Mm-hmm.
But there is a reason why the clients go to the specific interior designer, right? Do you think sort of attributes to why they sort of push those ideas onto their clients?
I think the interior designer should, you know, I'm always an advocate for pushing your own art and mm-hmm. your own personality and all that stuff. But if someone's coming to pay you for a service and you don't have them in mind at the end of the day, it feels like a little bit of a disservice.
Yeah, 100%.
I agree.
Yeah,
100%. That's true. Okay.
Yeah.
Good thing to keep in mind, yes.
Yeah. Especially when you're an interior designer shopping. Don't just go, you got to shop for these things.
Well, sold. You have sold me. So when it comes to your personal aesthetics, when it comes to interior design, I love that you're all about like functionality and the practicality, you know, prioritizing the customer needs and desires first. But when it comes to your look and your brand, what have been your influences or your inspiration?
Okay, let's talk about the things I'm not inspired about.
Okay.
And I'm going to bring back up vintage furniture and vintage.
Yeah, there you go. Let's get into it.
I think it's so overrated and so put on a pedestal and overpriced to the point where if you don't have vintage pieces in your home, you're not really considered a true like curator or collector of the arts, or like you have no personality, etc., etc. Like, there's this whole debate about people who go to, say, Ashley Furniture or like Living Spaces or something like that, and they buy like a matching set. If they like it, they like it, you know? But just because you're not like mix matching new with the old doesn't mean you don't have a personality. I think it's I think that's a very unfair take on people's individual style.
Yeah.
And on a practical note, like in terms of like real practicality, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way, right? Like, there is a creator out there, and I'm not going to say his name. You guys probably already know who he is if you're into interior design, who sourced a couple of really old vintage French doors to use as his kind of Juliet balcony, like opening doors. They're beautiful. They're amazing and all that stuff. But for some reason, it just rubbed me the wrong way that because you found these doors, you are now the advocate of French design and French history when you're not French yourself.
You know, it almost feels like you're Christopher Columbus.
Exactly. Like people who find these like even on Facebook Marketplace or whether they source them from like a gallery or whatever, it almost feels like a borrowed history.
Yeah, like you're not the originator. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
It feels like an elitist move of let me own something that nobody else can own. And it doesn't feel, you know, like it just doesn't feel welcoming to me. And so when people are like, oh, this is vintage, that this is, you can only get this here, I found this on a whim when on my trip on whatever, it's you know, it's the new age. I don't know. It just, do you guys get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Absolutely. And like, this is, I'm going to say this not from perspective of interior design, but like one thing that comes to mind is like, perhaps this kind of like new age trend is coming up because before everyone was so obsessed with like modern, sleek, you know, minimal, and it felt like there was no character. So, and now our kind of pattern in our society nowadays is everyone wants to be special. Everyone wants to be unique in their own way. So through interior design, they're finding these little one of a kind, it can't find anywhere type of pieces to kind of perpetuate this idea of like, my home is special and my interior design is only here because it's like kind of like a maybe it was just like a ripple effect of like this like really minimal, modern, sleek looking home to like, okay, now this is kind of like a pushback. This actually happens in the dance industry too. At first it was ballet and everything has to be poised and elegant and you look like you're not dying. Came contemporary and like postmodern where it's like, no, we are going to fall to the ground. We are going to do floor work as an opposition to ballet. So I see a little bit of a parallel of like the people's reactions to, you know, what was popular at the time.
Do you think it's now, this trend is only gotten like an increased amount of attention because of social media and clout?
I think so. I think everyone's looking for that treasure so they could share it.
Yeah. And say like, oh, I got it. And
yeah, like, now look what I found. You know, type of thing.
Yeah.
It's almost, and I do think what you were saying about it being like kind of counterintuitive, mm-hmm. like I would say so, yes, because people want that lived in look, and it's like, okay, mm-hmm. Miranda, you just bought this house. What do you mean lived in look?
You've been here for a week. Thank you.
You know?
Thank you.
To have a lived in look, you have to live in it. You can't manufacture that. And that's what people want. Oh my God.
Wait, that's such a great point. Lived in is lived in. Yeah. You have to wait for it to look lived in. You can't just curate this out of your freaking ass. You know what I mean?
You can't just. And that's what people are looking for. And it's so counterintuitive because then it becomes. And although it should be an extension of your personality, but it becomes like whose personality? You know, not yours, because you're looking for this. You know?
But I do want to say Mark is very, very good at looking for very expensive pieces and getting it for super cheap. Can you tell us your process on that? Because I was there when you found all these pieces, right? And it's actually a crazy process.
Yeah, spill the deets.
Yeah.
All right, let me give you some of my top saving tips.
Ooh, love it, yes.
Okay, shameless plug, but I've spoke a lot about this on my own TikTok. You can follow me at @levelofjessmark. So I think one of the biggest things that could save you a lot of money is understanding white labeled furniture and how it's all manufactured from the same place, and it's just being shipped around to different brands so they could slap their name on it and sell it at different price points when it's all the same thing. So say for instance you have a 6-drawer dresser or something that you found at Calvin Klein Home. Well, more than likely, you know, they didn't design that dresser themselves. So you could probably take the SKU number or just take a photo of it, reverse Google image search, and you'll find it on Wayfair and Overstock or Home Depot. And it's the exact same item and you get it for a lot less because it's being shipped to a retailer that doesn't have that brand name attached to it.
Oh, you're buying the brand.
Yeah, right. You're buying the brand.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
God, I feel so exploited. God.
Corporate America.
Okay, amazing. Another one.
All right. So what people don't really understand a lot about furniture, and I know DIYers understand this a lot because, you know, they've made a whole following and, you know, a whole, I would say, kind of living doing this. But things are more expensive, not because of build quality, but because of convenience, right? Mm-hmm. So say, for instance, you really liked an item from CB2 or Restoration Hardware or something like that. You buy it brand new. It's completely built already. They ship it to you, white glove service, and that thing would be $5,000, whatever it is, right? But if you go to an outlet or something like that, and these outlets are available in near every major city really in America, you'll find that a lot of these items are either returned and just dinged up a little bit, or there's no delivery service and you can find them for almost 60 to 70% off.
Oh my God.
Just because you don't have that white glove service, you know, but it's the same item. Really.
Wait, can you tell us about some of the, I've honestly didn't even know that there were furniture outlets.
Yeah, and I didn't know it either until Mark.
You're talking to the commoner. Wait, can you tell us just if possible, some names of outlet names, because I didn't even know they existed.
Sure. So they're just the same name. So Crate and Barrel Outlet, Restoration Hardware Outlet. They're just warehouses.
You just have to type an outlet.
Yeah. They're just warehouses of items that people return because it either didn't fit when it came in, or there was a little ding during shipping that you could just easily fix yourself with some furniture marker or something like that. And they're always marked down heavily, 60, 70% off.
Oh, damn.
If you're comfortable, can you give us an example of one of the furniture and the price drop?
Oh, yes. Please. My own dining table. Please.
It's gorgeous.
It's an 84-inch solid burl wood espresso. It's called the Bordeaux.
You remember the dining table, right?
Yes. And thank you for saying espresso.
I got it at Restoration Hardware. It was almost, it looked completely brand new. Mm-hmm. And a little tip is that at Restoration Hardware outlets, it goes down by 10% of the markdown price for every month it stays on the floor.
Oh.
So you could call in and a month later you like something, but maybe it's a little bit out of your price range. You could.
Oh, good tip. Yeah.
You could put in like a notice with the sales manager, or you could call in and be like, hey, is this item still here? And then more likely than not, a month later, it'll be 10% off. Because they're just trying to get inventory in and out, you know.
Kind of like car lots, like used car sales lots. Like the more it stays in the lot, the
cheaper it is.
Yeah, they're just trying to get rid of it. But it's the same item as you would get in the retail stores. So it was $6,000, mm-hmm. And I got it for about like $580.
Wait, how much percentage? That's like
90% off.
Oh my God.
It was a great
buy. My math was not mathing. I was like, I just know that's like, you can't even call that a steal. That's just like.
Right. Like you go to IKEA for the same size table, it wouldn't even be solid wood and it would cost that much. You know?
Oh my gosh. That's a skill. There's always
these tips that you could go.
Wait, thanks for sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. Do you have another one?
Oh, yes. Okay. So you could always find the manufacturer of a piece of furniture. If you find something online that you really like, copy and paste the entire description and then Google search it. Mm-hmm. And then bring it back. And then when you search it, you'll find that it's on a bunch of these other websites. Obviously, like, you know, like I said earlier, like Home Depot, Overstock and all that stuff. But you'll realize that they all kind of have like the same SKU number. So if you take that SKU number and then you take it into, I think Amazon, it'll tell you what manufacturer, because usually Amazon is like a direct to seller type of situation. Mm-hmm. It'll tell you what manufacturer that piece of like furniture came from. Mm-hmm. And then you could shop their storefront from there and you'll see that they have distributed to a bunch of these other places.
Wow.
So many tips today.
You guys, this is a golden episode. I feel like we should be paying you for this. Oh my God. Folks, save your freaking money. Don't pay for the brand. Understand, I don't know, consumer
deceit?
Yes. Because I, for one, did not know about this like at all. I moved into my new place a couple of months ago. I want to say like,
yeah,
four or 5 months ago, maybe. What do you think about thrifted furniture? Because I thrift a lot of my furniture. I mostly did it because it's like so much cheaper than other places, but also like, I don't want to go to IKEA and buy like something that's not like real wood and something that's not going to last and something that's going to like get dinged up so quickly. Thoughts about thrifted?
I think thrifted furniture is a great way to shop for furniture because it kind of brings it back into like the cycle, you know, reduce and reuse and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of older pieces, like you're saying, they were made out of real wood and, you know, before everyone just started making cheap furniture just to make the maximum profit that they can, you know, type of thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that you should be prepared for when thrifting for furniture is that there are options where you can take something and take the frame of it and get it reupholstered for cheaper locally. You could don't stray away from big items like a sofa because you think, there might be like mites or bed bugs. Or something in it, you know?
Yeah.
Because you could always take the frame of that and get it reupholstered and all that stuff too for much cheaper.
Huh.
I didn't even think
about that. Are there any things that we should watch out for when we do thrift? Like, should we like freeze the shit out of it? Is that an ignorant question?
No. I don't think it is. Is it an ignorant question?
I don't think so. I would say that you should always prioritize things that don't have fabric because then you know that you could clean it right away. But if you were going to get something with fabric, then I would suggest to get it reupholstered just because you never really know where it came from.
Yeah.
But the base of that furniture, like the base of the sofa or the base of that like bed frame is probably very good.
Yeah. I mean, I bought my nightstand from a thrift store. I mean, I had to work for it, which kind of goes back to the point of convenience, right? Sometimes you do have to put in a little bit more time and energy and effort.
And like, if you want to thrift and you're in the Bay Area, the first Sunday of every month in Alameda up in Oakland, they have a furniture fair where local people come in with their furniture. It's kind of like a big garage sale, really. And you could go shopping there too.
Field trip. We need to like
write that down, folks.
The Alameda, what's it called? Flea market.
Flea market.
Oh, I love flea markets, you guys. I mean, like, okay, it kind of goes, like, on theme with, like, this character thing. But I think it, like, there is so much more, like, character to just, like, buying it at a thrift store or at a flea market or directly from the seller who actually made it, you know?
Yeah. Right. There's a difference between, and I'd want to go back to the whole vintage thing because essentially, like, you are kind of buying vintage when you go to a flea market, right? You're buying older things and all that stuff. But I think the difference between like buying it in this sort of sense, as opposed to kind of like sourcing it out and treasuring it in the way that people do now, is just that when you find like a vintage piece that is just like just as good that you could use it every day and you do use it every day, I think that's good.
It's more worth it.
Yeah, because then it becomes useful. It really, you know, it's now a useful thing in your home. But when you find like a
French door.
Like a exactly. When you find like a French door that you're going to install and then like never use or never open because it's so like
heavy.
or fragile, you know. Then it doesn't become a useful thing in your home. And that's, I think, where the difference lies.
Utility.
Yeah.
The utility, which goes back to,
you know, sorry, another digression is just like fast fashion, there is fast furniture, right? Mm. And because I do go thrifting a lot, sometimes I find like Shein clothes for like $7 for a shirt. And I'm like, why the hell would I pay $7 for a fast fashion shirt that's not even good quality? Mm-hmm. So like I'm seeing that in the thrift stores a little bit more nowadays. And I think that might be kind of true with furniture too, because they don't actually invest in like good quality, like long lasting pieces. They're much more likely to just kind of like give it away or throw it away, which is why we have like so much garbage. So you know, investing in actually a good long lasting good quality furniture, I think is the key. And you can get it half price with like with the tips that Mark gave us. Damn, I feel like I just saved like $10,000 just listening to this. Love it. Any other influences when you design your own home?
Oh, absolutely. I've been going for a really, like, moody look lately.
Moody? What does that mean? When I think moody, I think purple.
That's I would say that's part of the color palette. So I would say that people are wisening up to the fact that people are always doing the all white or all beige aesthetic. You know what I mean?
Oh.
And people are starting to not like that anymore. It's becoming the new millennial gray where everyone has beige everything.
Oh my God.
You know?
That's how I feel about fashion. I'm like, you guys, yes, we love neutrals, but have a little bit of color. You know, exactly. Have a little bit of character and personality, you know? Give exactly. a little pizzazz, you know? Give a little spice.
And I'm not hating on the people who like that style, because if you like that style, it's a very easy entry to barrier or barrier to entry when it comes to like interior decorating and interior design in general. But having a lot darker tones gives your house a more dynamic feel. A lot of the like new construction buildings or apartments or even houses now, like it's very typical to find like light wood floors or like white walls and all that stuff. So when you add beige and white to that, it feels so sterile. But if you add like blacks and dark greens and burgundies, then it becomes more dynamic. You have more contrast, more visual interest as you walk into
it. Oh, okay. Because like in my mind, I'm thinking like, okay, it's pretty light and neutral. So I should keep it light and neutral. Right? But it's actually the opposite, huh?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. So don't be afraid of color, even if you have a lighter palette in your home. Interesting. Any like simple rules you would tell us? Like if you have like light wood floors, like should you get a dark rug and a dark sofa?
I think it's more of a material kind of situation.
Oh,
me and Hua talked about this when she was looking at her bathroom.
He convinced us to do a moody restroom.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It was like he gave us like options. He gave us the option of the clean white, beige, and all that. And that's what I wanted, because I was like, it just looks clean.
Yeah, but we don't know. We're just commoners.
And then he gives us the option of moody. And then I was just like, should we? We tried mix matching and now we're full moody.
Now she kind of has like some emerald tiles.
Oh!
Some slate floors.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Okay, I'm so excited for emerald tiles. Yeah. Also, I think that's a good make of what makes a good interior designer, because sometimes the customer doesn't know.
I didn't know
what they want unless they actually visualize it. But for you to have that vision and to be able to say, like, you know, like without pushing the agenda, I think that's a great trait of what makes a good interior designer.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've been so educated. We're talking about textures, right? We're talking about how wood, different woods don't match. Mm-hmm. Like you shouldn't mix wood, but can mix metals.
You know, to each his own, obviously. Do whatever you'd like in your own home, but A rule that I like to follow is that if there is wood present in your home, you should try to keep that same type of wood or tone of wood throughout the whole space.
Like, so don't vary when it comes to wood.
Right. So if you have like a warm oak floor, you don't want to get like a cool ashy like ash wood for your cabinets, mm-hmm. because the two different tones, they'll clash and it's going to look weird. And I don't want to say it looks weird like, oh, it's always going to look weird. But it's just typically like you want to stay in the same tone.
Okay. Sounds good. Let's get a little
saucy.
Tell us about like the worst client ever that you've had to work with, where it was like, okay, whatever. I'm like, this client wants two different types of wood. I don't know, like whatever. Let's get a little saucy. Some of the most difficult people or clients that you've had to work with.
I was designing an office space for a company, and there is one person that everyone had to get their, I guess, permissions and their okays to proceed with these designs. For those of you interested, it is on 510 Townsend, and the first floor is an open space. You can go check it out yourself.
Okay. You designed it?
Yeah. Oh, well, not me specifically, but me and a team. Okay. Right? So we all took different parts of it. So our initial concept design was, it was seven floors. We wanted to do something hyper-local. We wanted to do like one floor would be the Embarcadero. One floor would, like, the walk down there, you know, water, ferry, all that stuff. One floor would be, say, like, the ballpark, you know. We wanted to dedicate
the history
of that. One floor would be, like, Fi Dive with all the, what do you call those? The cars? But it's, like, buses, like the old-time buses. I don't know what it's called.
The trolleys?
Yeah, those little trolleys things. It would be, like, dedicated to, like, stuff like that. And you know, we had the green light to, you know, to go with this design and everything like that. And so we spent a lot of money. We hired a lot of artists, graphic designers, and interior designers alike, you know, to kind of put this space together. And when it came to the final concept presentation, the one person we needed to get our okay from was this project executive that was going to move into this building. And we realized that she got promoted, so she was not even going to be working here. She was just going to... She was going to get promoted after the end of this project. So, like, her opinion didn't really even matter.
Okay, bye, Miranda.
Exactly. Exactly. We still had to get the okay from her because for the time being, this is her role. And she just didn't like the pastels that we picked out and, you know, the local art that we picked out, too, because it was, you know, it was Latin highlighted as well because there was a lot of Latin artists around the area. And so she kind of, like, at the end of the day, decided to go a different route, a little bit more safer. So instead we did senses, like the first floor would be like seeing, the second floor would be sound, you know, instead of this hyper-local like concept that we really like developed.
What?
Right.
And but it's like you guys got the okay of it. So it's like you guys kind of already did it.
And right. And that's where the difficulty of this client came in, you know, like you, like she thought it was an amazing idea. But then when she saw the final rendition of it, she was like, actually, let's completely start over. And those are kind of like the worst type of clients where like they just changed their mind to a hard pivot.
Damn.
And so I
think. And you couldn't even negotiate.
No.
There was no compromise. Right?
Yeah, there was no compromise. So we kind of just had to redo the whole thing and on a more safe palette. And I think the one thing that I learned from that difficult situation is that, you know, like you said, people don't know what they want, really. Mm-hmm. And even if they give you the okay, you always have to be prepared to...
Persuade them.
Yeah, you always have to be prepared to either do that or just have a safer option in the back of your head. Because at the same time, you know, people always revert back to what's safe.
Yeah, what's within their comfort and security, what has been tried and true, instead of perhaps taking a little bit of more of a... you know, tried out method.
Yeah.
Yeah, that freaking sucks. Damn.
It's okay though. I mean, it all worked out.
Yeah.
But, and obviously I don't work there anymore, so it's all good.
Yeah. Okay. Is this still there?
It's still there.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. So then you saw it all the way to completion. And then it was.
And then I jumped ship.
As you should, because now, you know, you're happier.
And yeah, now I'm happier. Now I'm doing my own thing.
Yeah.
My own little design, little thing. It's awesome.
Would you ever go back? Because right now you're helping with a lot of residential design work. Would you ever go back to designing
commercial? I am actually. So I have a project going on right now.
Okay.
It's downtown Palo Alto. It's called Sprouts Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
We have completed, you know, the subcontracting and the final concept designs, and we spec'd out all the materials and all the furniture and everything. And install is going to be the first 3 weeks of December. And it's going to reopen the first week of January.
We got to go.
We
got
to go.
So if you're in the area, yay, check it out.
Pop your pussies. Totally not appropriate.
Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah. What about one of the projects that has like really sparked joy in your soul? And you're like, wow, I'm so freaking happy doing this process right now.
I think it's just for my own space. You know, I don't think you can ever feel more proud of something that you own yourself. So I think that's that. Well, let me ask you guys some questions.
Okay.
So what is your aesthetic, or what do you feel is comfortable in your kind of decorating space? What do you enjoy in your interior?
So I'm going to be vulnerable and I'm just going to say it. I relate it a lot to fashion because I'm also very much into like fashion and looks and stuff. My personal fashion style is I steer away from like the basic and the neutrals. I like to be colorful. I like to be loud.
And that's so your personality. That really is.
I like to wear things that, you know, like you say, like have a lot of character. And nowadays I've been very much into boho.
That's why at the this or that, I was like, I can't wait to hear less of it.
Yeah. But not because like, it's trending. I feel like boho, when it comes to fashion, the look, that was trending like when we were in like middle school or something. But I've only gotten into it now because if you know me, I'm very free spirited. And that kind of like, for lack of better terms, like hippie-ish look, just more patterns and loud and not afraid of being bold, really does resonate with me. So in my bedroom, it's got, I don't have the jargon for this. It's just like wood looking with like a dream catcher, like a lot of plants and a lot of flowers.
Oh, I love spaces with a lot of plants.
Yeah. Like thready, like I like textured things. That's as much as I can describe it. I'm also very like minimal. I don't like to have a lot of things out, but that doesn't mean I don't want my decor to be minimal looking, if that makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Statement pieces.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Thanks.
I love that.
Okay, what about you, Bob?
I really don't know. I'm in a very confused state right now because the thing is, like, I've rented for so long, and I think that's the difference between like your approach and my approach, because you go all out on your rented space. Like,
yeah, I do.
Mark paints his walls and shit.
Oh, you do
know?
Go all out.
I put like, up yeah, wallpapers.
He goes all out.
Damn.
Me, like, because I'm in such a short-term mentality that's like, oh, I'm not gonna be living here forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, why should I invest in like, you know, repainting the walls? Because my living room right now, yellow walls, and it drives me nuts because it's like, it's so dark at night. But I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna live here for a long time. Yeah. So I'm not gonna pay the money to paint it. I like a cozy home, anything that makes me feel warm and just grounded, I'll go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just like things clean. Sorry, it's cluttered right now, but this is not me.
She didn't need to say that, by the way. You guys don't have to see this room.
I know, but for you guys.
What do you think, going off from that, what do you think is the power of interior design? Because it's more than just looks.
Mm-hmm.
It's peace of mind. I really think it's peace
being
of
grounded,
mind.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, you can say that again. Amen. Yeah, say
people
more.
People say all the time, out of sight, out of mind. And I truly believe that.
Like, yeah.
If you have, and I also believe in the saying that everything has its place. And I don't know if that's just kind of like something that came up from my own childhood, that I just wanted everything to be like clean, just because I don't want to like see a mess or whatever.
Same.
But I really feel like when you come home, you know, the world is hectic as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really distracting. Everything is trying to take your attention away from you, or like for even like anything. And so when you come home, you really want to just feel calm and relaxed, because it really is your little corner of the world that you have to, that you can relax and unwind in. And when it's, I would say when it's distracting, as if like if there was a lot of like clutter or things that you don't like, like say for instance, Hua, you mentioned that like at night it gets really dark because of the yellow walls and all that stuff, mm-hmm. right? That's just, like, if you did paint it white, that's one thing you don't have to worry about anymore.
I know.
And mm-hmm. even the littlest bit of, like, peace of mind really goes a long way in the long term.
Yeah, yeah.
100%.
But I'm moving out, so let's go! Goodbye, yellow walls!
Yeah, I think that interior design has the power to transform how you feel mm-hmm. in that space. So in that regard, I think it is so powerful where, you know, like you can create your little nook and you can create your little like safe space, as you call it. And in different parts of the room, kind of like the company that you design for, it can have different spaces depending on your state or, you know, depending on how you feel. You know, you can go to like during the pandemic, a lot of people work from their homes. So maybe mm-hmm. in an office, like you... I don't know from an interior design perspective, but maybe you have like a scent in that room. And then when you go to your living room or your bedroom, maybe you have a lavender scent to have it be like more like relaxing. And I would say it's just the same for interior design. I'm just saying like from what I know, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. Right. And your intuition and your gut feeling is always right when it comes to your like living space. So if you need that separation between work and like your bedroom, then you need that separation, you know?
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
So if you were to die tomorrow, which won't happen, which room would you showcase as your funeral? Because it's like the space that you're like the most proud of.
My living room.
Why?
Truly my living room. So I live, I found a very good deal here in San Francisco. It's a tri-level loft. It's 20-foot ceilings. It's an amazing open concept space. And I just think that with the freedom of being able to put that layout like really towards anything because it's so open concept, I really just want people to see. And I don't mean to say that I have the most optimal way of living, but, you know, I do keep it in mind. And I do think I have the most optimal.
He does. I'll vouch for that.
So I want people to come into it and just see, like, you can feel the easy energy. You can feel that everything is... you know, tucked away and in its place. And it's just, when I come home, it's just, you know, it's a great place to relax. And it's, and there's nothing, and Hua, I know you're going to get into this for the first time when you move into your house, but there really is no better feeling, I think, than looking around you and seeing, I did this for myself.
Oh, it's like self-care. It's like self-love, honestly.
I'm excited.
Yes.
A different form of self-love.
Yeah.
We always talk about like pampering ourselves and stuff, but we don't really talk about pampering our space.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And taking care of that part of our lives. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Wow. Are there any closets where you just stuff everything in there?
Because absolutely. Like-
So that's what you don't you want them to see.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But no, out of sight, out of mind.
Awesome. We're all humans here.
Yes, we're all human. We all got that one closet.
Yes, that's good to know. Because we all got one. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to move on to a tradition that we have on this podcast. We want every guest to write their own eulogy read it to us.
Oh, I was, you know, I wrote this and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to have a lighthearted feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, love it.
Hello, all friends and family alike. Here lies the well-preserved body of Mark.
Well-preserved.
We apologize for the cold here tonight. Freezing him was the cleanest way to keep him fresh. As we gather here remembering all that is Mark, we would want us all to know one thing. Do not mourn his death. He is not gone forever. He will stay in our memories, hearts, and homes, for he is nosy and probably a ghost now. Procrastination was Mark's middle name. If there was an award for putting things off, he'd have won it every year. At only 20 years old, the only thing that he did accomplish early was die. Much like trends in design or the seasons around us, Mark's untimely death is a reminder that life is a roller coaster and there are constant ups and downs that we all face. Whether we like it or not, we can't stop it. And the only thing that we can do is react to it. Mm-hmm. So make it dramatic and make it fun. In his hands lie the first clue to a series of clues scattered amongst his belongings, dwellings, and even within the walls.
Oh my god.
Whomever reaches the end gets all his fortune, riches, and entitlements. We will now begin the thawing process of his body, and he will soon be free from this ice.
Oh my god.
Let the scavenger hunt begin.
Oh! Wow. Wow. That was like beyond... I'm sweating.
I did not expect the scavenger hunt. That like that threw me for a whirlwind.
I'm like flabbergasted. That was a roller coaster in itself. That eulogy, full of humor, full of sass and wit, full of cleverness, and turns and surprises.
Yeah,
that
like freezing your body.
I know.
Who?
But also, like, that is so Mark.
Is that gonna be in your like will? Is that the plan? Okay.
But also, like, it's going to be like the Hunger Game where everyone's going to be primal and be like, I'm going to get that prize.
Mark just watching from above.
Oh my gosh.
Me as a ghost.
Yes, puppets.
Wait,
yes.
This is so fresh. This is so original. Mm-hmm. I have never heard of a eulogy like this. You know, because
I think,
like,
this isn't what we were expecting.
No, but I love it.
We were just thinking, like, okay, it's going to be very, like, emotional,
yeah,
you know?
Because that's what we are.
Yeah, because... I am emotion. Emotion is I.
Yes. That was amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
That was more than what I would have imagined, honestly.
That made me very happy.
Dude, I'm fucking sweating.
Then that's the point, you know? I don't want people to be sad if I die.
Oh, I'm going to be sad, though. But I'll be laughing, too.
We will have a spectrum of emotions.
Yeah, yeah. But... All right, thanks for that very entertaining eulogy, mm-hmm, and thank you for joining us on
thank
our podcast and enlightening us with all your knowledge about interior design. Now we can approach it in a more
practical way.
Practical, mm-hmm, and money-saving way.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were our first guest, and it was amazing, and we had a great time.
I hope
time.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I had fun.
Yes.
This was great.
Yeah.
And folks, think about how you approach the spaces in your homes right now. If anything is bothering you, think about the power and the reason behind of interior design, and I hope that we can inspire you to have a different viewpoint about interior design today.
Yeah. Oh, I guess like one last question is, why does interior design matter?
To you.
To you.
You know, as with everything, as, you know, being an extension of your personality, I think that's it. It's just, why does anyone like doing anything that they like if not because they like it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Simple but powerful reason.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me. This was so fun.
This was really fun. All right.
And with that, let's say our goodbyes.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
We'll tune in next time.
Meditating on death.